Check, 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 1, 2, 1, 2, hello, this is me talking on the microphone, and this is what Cargill sounds like. This is what Cargill sounds like.
I don't sound anything like that.
No, I'm
I don't sound anything like that at all.
God damn it.
That's a terrible impression.
Damn it.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema. Who are these guys?
The perfect time, the perfect place. The perfect podcast. It's Junk Food Cinema, brought to you by FilmSchoolRejects.com.
.com.
Dot white guy karate.
I don't know, with that cold open, man, I feel like you're about to sell me some Rio Nitti on ice or something. The perfect time, the perfect place for Rio Nitti on ice.
A lot of this movie and a lot of this subsequent podcast is going to sound like we are selling you a lot of different shit.
Oh, this month just got rough, baby. Strap in, because we went from, hey, we've been meaning to cover these movies for a long time, to, oh, and this is also a movie.
I believe you summed it up perfectly 5 minutes into the viewing tonight when you said, somebody put this on Blu-ray, which is a fact.
It is a fact.
It cannot
somebody
be denied.
Somebody put this on Blu-ray. You cannot deny that somebody put The Perfect Weapon on Blu-ray. But before we get to why they put this on Blu-ray,
we need to talk about why we do this. Cult and exploitation film cast. So good. It just has to be fattening. And it's for the listeners. It's for our patrons who are supporting us on Patreon financially. Patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. You guys are keeping the lights on here. For as little as a dollar an episode, you get access to bonus content nobody else gets to hear. But we do have a level. We have a tier of $25 an episode, and if you commit to that for a full month, that's 4 episodes. So basically, for 100 bones, you get to tell us what movie to cover. And as Cargill learned tonight the hard way, we don't say no.
Yeah, that was a totally a goal you came up with, and I was fine with, because nobody ever did it, and as soon as everyone figured out it was a thing, we end up with The Perfect Weapon.
And that is what we're doing as part of our continued listener or patron request month, is we are talking about a 1991, because this movie is definitely not Y2K compliant.
No, it's not, and this movie does, though, have the power.
It has all of the power. It's Jeff Speakman in The Perfect Weapon.
Paramount Pictures presents international Kenpo star, Jeff Speakman.
You should be more respectful of our organization.
Is there a problem here?
Yeah. Guess so.
Hey, Terminator, I don't know where you came from, but you better go back. Those Kaiser Golden Fists. You're a dead man.
A tragedy he could not prevent.
Kim!
It's a signature execution. We've seen it before.
Leads him into a forbidden world with nothing to rely on but his own lethal skills.
Who killed Kim?
Who said it never hurt to ask? Young and I have some unfinished business. I will finish it.
He has no gun. No fear.
Are you faster than a speeding bullet?
No equal.
No problem.
In his explosive motion picture debut, Jeff Speakman is The Perfect Weapon.
I was having dinner earlier this week with one of Junk Food's favorite listeners.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you guys, he's been on a couple episodes. You guys know him. You guys love him. He's on a little podcast called It's the Movie Crypt. He had asked me, what are you guys covering this week? And I'm like, oh, well, we're covering this movie that I'm really excited about. Uh-huh. And we're covering The Perfect Weapon. And he goes, with Jeff Speakman?
Jeff Speakman.
Because, holy shit, 1991. All right, we're cutting into it already.
Old man Cargill, that old man Cargill.
They tried so hard to make Jeff Speakman a thing. I watched this movie when it came out. I could not tell you anything about it.
Sure.
Like, I just sat here and rewatched it with Brian, and he will vet. He will guarantee I could not remember a single fucking plot detail of this goddamn movie.
Not remotely.
It was like watching it for the first time over again. But the minute he said...
Feels like the first time.
But the minute he said he wants to cover The Perfect Weapon, I'm like, wait, the Jeff Speakman one?
Jeff Speakman.
Because holy shit, did they try to make Jeff Speakman the next Chuck Norris / Van Damme. They tried so hard.
Yeah.
Every commercial was not about the movie. It wasn't about the plot. No. It was about Jeff fucking Speakman. He was the next action hero. You've had your Chuck Norris, you've got your Van Damme, you've got your Seagal, now meet Jeff Speakman, the perfect fucking weapon, and oh my god, that was the last time we ever heard of him.
Jeff Speakman is no Van Damme. He's not even Jean-Claude G. Golly. This guy cannot live up to the enormous cultural impact of Bloodsport, which is what this movie so desperately wants to be. And I say that right down to the fact that it's directed by Mark Dasalle, who's a producer on Bloodsport, who directed Kickboxer, supposedly.
And also, the movie fucking opens, and we meet the guy, and then we get doodaloot, doodaloot, doodaloot. Like, honest to God, water down the front of the camera lens to show us we're going into a flashback. Into like 20 minutes of flashback to give us the setup. By the way, none of which we fucking need.
No.
Again, just like Kickboxer, we don't need that background.
Oh, no, it's Bloodsport. Bloodsport has the 35-minute flashback where we're like, I don't need to know about dopey young Jean-Claude Van Damme attempting to steal a sword from his sensei.
I wasn't going to steal it.
Yeah, like none
as much
of this-
as we love Bloodsport, that is an unnecessary flashback. That's a 5-yard penalty. That's an unnecessary flashback.
That said, we watched this. This movie is listed as being 87 minutes. The movie's over at 80 minutes. It's 7 minutes of credits.
Yeah.
Like, there is apparently a 112-minute cut of this movie, which is a TV edit, which apparently an entire actor from this film appears in that only appears wordlessly. We'll get there.
Oh, we'll fucking get there.
We'll get there. How a fourth build character just shows up in like 3 scenes of the movie to stand silently and stare into the camera.
No lines.
I have no idea, but there it is. This okay, so let's just say it now.
Yeah.
This is one of those where everybody say it with me. This is not a good movie.
But it's a great movie.
Like, this is, you just need to, the perfect weapon is nothing but problems. Like, there is, the only thing good about it happened before they rolled the camera. The only thing worth really pointing out about this movie is, oh my god, the fucking cast.
Oh, like, yes.
Like, and not Jeff Speakman. Like, remove Jeff Speakman from this movie.
In fact, in spite of Speakman, you might say.
In spite of Speakman. Everyone Speakman talks to, it's like, holy shit, they literally got every working Asian actor except who, Brian?
I believe they failed to get Al Leong and Pat Morita, and that was it.
That was it. Aside from those two, everyone else. And in fact, there's going to be times we won't even use their names. We're going to use their most famous characters, because by the way, we've covered most of those characters on this podcast over the year. This is one of those movies that there are so many fucking alums in it, and the only one who's not a fucking alum is Jeff Speakman.
Jeff Speakman! I'm promoting the idea that he's going to get his own superhero TV show on the CW that's just called Speakman, with the power to have a perpetual 5 o'clock shadow, which he rocks in this movie. You gotta say that at least.
Dude, It's, you know how they say it's always 5 o'clock somewhere? It's on Jeff Speakman's face.
It's on Jeff Speakman's face.
That is just, it is just, the, he has a perfectly coined 5 o'clock shadow. He wakes up that way. He goes to bed that way.
I woke up like this.
Like, it's, I have no idea how he has maintained such a perfect 5 o'clock shadow.
The only person who has a better 5 o'clock shadow is Jason Statham, because Jason Statham's 5 o'clock shadow is consuming the rest of his head. It has grown up to the top of his skull and come all the way back down the other side. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, but even then, it's not quite, like, there's... Jeff Speakman is just like, he's a low-rent Wolverine. Like, just every time you look at him, he's like, what happened if Captain Hammer and Wolverine had a kid?
And also, somebody needs to throw Nathan Fillion in there, because he
looks
like...
That's Captain Hammer.
Okay, yes, you're right.
Captain Hammer,
that's correct.
Yes. There's even a scene where he... Inappropriately,
for no reason.
Inappropriately puts a hammer where a hammer doesn't belong while he's just standing having conversation. And you're just kind of like... You'd think the director would walk up and go, Jeff, you think you can do something else with that hammer? Nope, putting it right here in my dong.
That's another 10-yard penalty for inappropriate hammer placement.
It's like, nope, I'm just sending a message to the ladies.
I gotta go ahead and call you on that one. Because...
That's why they call me Jeff the Hammer Speakman. Jeff, that name's taken by a far better actor with a much longer filmography.
Yo, this is Fred the Hammer Williamson. You're listening to Chunk Food Cinema with Brian and Cargill. So keep on listening. You just might learn something.
A much longer filmography. A much longer hammer as well.
Why don't you tell us about Jeff Speakman for a moment?
I'm going to tell you a little bit about Jeff Speakman.
Give us a little background on who this Jeff Speakman we keep speaking about as if he was one day going to be a thing really is.
First of all, you said he is not a JFC alum. That was technically false.
You are absolutely correct. You know what? That is...
It's horrible. I hate splitting this hair so much, you have no idea.
No. It just dawned on me. I'm like, fuck no, he's technically an alum. Because Jeff Speakman, of his first roles, is as mansion guard man in Lionheart. He's literally a guy that fucking Jean-Claude Van Damme kicks for a moment in Lionheart.
Okay, so Jeff Speakman, to understand Jeff Speakman, I think you have to go to his IMDb bio, which one of
would
my...
Would you, though?
You need
to. Do you really need to go to his bio?
Yes, and here's why. It has one of my favorite tropes on all of IMDb, which is clearly written by the actor, but trying to make it sound like a biographer wrote it.
Oh, God.
Because it says things like, and I shit you not, this is verbatim. Jeff Speakman was born and raised in Chicago, Illinois, where he became an All-American springboard diver in high school. He broke records in his school's district and conference, all without ever having a coach. Determined to go to college, he worked for 6 years and graduated with honors from Missouri State College, earning a bachelor's degree in psychology with a minor...
By the way, all of these things...
Why is it CV on the fucking IMDb bio?
This is why it needs to be on your IMDb bio. I need to write my own IMDb bio. I don't know why it doesn't mention that I am a community college dropout... who used to work at fucking Threadgill.
Because it's IMDb
and Blockbuster
and not fucking LinkedIn. Jeff Speakman's superpower is to treat IMDb like LinkedIn.
Oh.
Why do I need to know about your minor in biology, Jeff Speakman, who currently holds a 6-degree black belt in Japanese Goju Ryu?
That is the only salient bit of information so far.
And a 6-degree black belt in American Kempo Karate. He is also the founder and director of American Kempo Karate Systems, which sounds like a pyramid scheme, but apparently is an international Kempo Karate organization with more than 50 schools. So, yeah, there you go. And in 1993, he was in fact inducted into the Black Belt Hall of Fame as Instructor of the Year. That sounds made up. Is there really a Black Belt Hall of Fame? Is that a thing? Like, can I go to Canton, Ohio and go to the Black Belt Hall of Fame? Because I might. You don't know. I've been to some weird places as a kid. I went to some weird tourist trappy places. I might go to the Black Belt Hall of Fame.
I think you definitely would go to the Black Belt Hall of Fame. If you knew where that was, you'd make a road trip and you'd drag your wife along to it.
I feel like it's probably in Saskatoon. I don't know why.
You take your kids. Daddy, why are we... Shut up. We're looking at black belts.
It's the kind of thing where I'm like, I will turn this car around. And they're like, please do it. Please do turn this car around. No one wants to go to this place but you. But that's Jeff Speakman in a nutshell. And by nutshell, I mean a CV on fucking LinkedIn, because that's what we just read off.
Wow.
But he, yeah, he's apparently from the Van Damme school of white guy karate. And
he always fights in blue jeans.
Oh my God. Denim on top, denim on bottom, denim in a roundhouse kick. There is so much denim in this movie.
There's a lot of denim.
So much denim. It's one of my favorite things about movies like this, where it's like, all the other guys who are clearly better martial artists are getting their asses handed to them by the guy in dad jeans. Just, you're getting an acid wash beat down.
See, that just hurts when you say it that way, though. Because that's the thing. This is 1991. This is me in high school. Like, this is sophomore, junior year of high school, Cargill. This is, Vanilla Ice is still kind of relevant, high school. And it is, like, there's another character in this movie who wears clothing I swear to God I fucking owned.
Oh, like, I believe it.
Like, it's like, this movie is so painfully 1991.
How 1991 is it?
Not only does it open up with Snaps, I've Got the Power, but it plays all of Snaps, I've Got the Power. Like, it's just Jeff Speakman working out after he gets off his job at the construction site. Why is he a construction worker? We don't fucking know.
He literally digs ditches. That's his
job.
He's
literally working to go, hey, take a water break. And then the next thing, Snaps, I've Got the Power is on. He's fucking working out. And it plays the whole song until the DJ comes in at the end and he goes, I've got the power too. That was Snaps, I've Got the Power.
But I've Got the Power. We've got the power here at KXAN, blah, blah, blah. It's like, wait, what? What's going on right now? We paid for Snap. We're playing Snap twice.
It's going
to come back.
It's going to come back, but like not until the end.
It's like a boomerang. It always comes back. Now, we touched on it. We didn't actually mention the Asian Actor Hall of Fame, which I feel should be a real thing.
Well, I mean, we're gonna get there. I thought we were still slam dunking on Jeff Speakman.
Speakman!
I thought this was just a three-pointer challenge at this point.
Jeff Speakman. Apparently, we've listed his most impressive credits as looking like Nathan Fillion.
Yes, also his 5 o'clock shadow.
His 5 o'clock shadow and fighting in jeans.
By the way, let's point out, in the fighting scenes, he's actually really good.
He is good. Now, here's the one problem with this movie. No, with in particular.
No.
In particular with the fighting scenes. Unlike some other movies, like if you're watching a movie with, let's say, Mark Dacascos, right? Mark Dacascos is...
If you're so inclined to watch a movie with Mark Dacascos.
All fucking day, Mark Dacascos. Don't you worry about it. When he fights, his martial arts skills are such that they don't have to cut very often. And while I agree with you, Jeff Speakman is definitely somebody who can fight and is a talented martial artist, there's a fair amount more cutting in this than you would see in a Van Damme
Dacascos.
And it's not... I don't think it's for lack of talent. I just think that whoever was in charge of the editing was a little overzealous, because I feel like Speakman definitely could have held that shot when needed.
I will say that contrary to everything we went through with Jean-Claude Van December,
yes,
there's not a lot of repeated kicks in this.
That's very true.
The one thing I will say to its credit in the editing of this is that there's not a lot of, hey, did you like when I kicked him in the head? Because I'm going to show you three different angles of that with the same fucking kick. How was that? Great. Let's watch that for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
It's very much like he kicks, he fights, and then he gets really pissed off and he goes...
Yeah, he goes Ip Man on people.
Like, yeah, he just goes fucking E Honda on the guys and just fucking. You think a Street Fighter reference? Wait till we get to Mortal Kombat, motherfuckers. We are going all through the early 90s today. Yeah, he goes E Honda on them and knocks them the fuck out. You're like, holy shit. Like, that's the thing that is most impressive about this is it actually. Also, there's a moment in this where they did really impress me in which. He's like, I'm going to take all three you want. And then you get this, he's like, no, he's mine. And he fights one guy, and he beats his ass. And the other two like, fuck this. And then they dogpile on him, you know, and fucking start kicking the shit out of him because it's not easy fighting two dudes.
Yeah.
And it was like, it's one of those things in movies where it's like, I'm going to fight five guys at once. It's like, not if they know how to fight you aren't.
No,
and this
right.
movie's like, oh no, they have to actually actively fuck up for him to actually get regain his ground.
That's why this is a white guy karate movie and not a white guy ninja movie. Because if this is Dudikoff,
Dudikoff lives in his own Duda universe.
This you do to you, and I'll do to cop.
The Dudiverse.
The Dudiverse. The thing is, if this is a Dudikoff movie, those ninjas are attacking one at a motherfucking time.
That is correct.
These guys are fighting three on one, and they are not waiting for their turn. They are dogpiling on him, exactly as you said. And it is fun to watch him just get his ass kicked for a few minutes, because, you know what? It's a little more McLean. It's a little more, you know what? I believe in this hero because I'm watching him be vulnerable. And by vulnerable, I mean in the next scene, he's got a wee bit of discoloration under his eye to prove that he's really his ass kicked.
Yeah, he never gets hurt.
Because this, pointing at my face, that's the moneymaker for Jeff Speakman. When you look like Nathan Fillion, you don't want to mess up the moneymaker.
Yeah. So, okay. So we've talked about Jeff quite a bit.
Jeff who?
Speakman.
Speakman!
Let's get into how amazing is the cast of baddies in this fucking movie. Because this cast of baddies and then slightly not baddies and then absolutely not baddies is pretty fucking awesome.
You'd get thrown out of a Vegas casino for this cast because it is a fucking stacked deck of incredible actors. I mean, first of all, so Jeff Speakman plays a character named Jeff Sanders because Jeff.
I love that his dad is Captain Sanders right before he gets promoted to colonel.
Yes, this is true. And he starts telling the world about his son and $5 Philip meals. So yes, Jeff Sanders is he's a young delinquent, and he's enrolled by his father in a Kempo school in hopes of teaching him some self-discipline. But then, yes, Cargill, you had a question. Yes, a question from the back.
No. I have to point out, this movie, so there's a lot of backstory here.
So much backstory.
But the beauty of the backstory is that we keep seeing, like, flashbacks to, like, his dad and his dad's best friend, who we will get to in a second. And there's even a picture of them clearly in Nam together, but it's clearly taken like days before they shot the scene.
Oh, yeah.
So like it looks like these 50-year-old dudes in Vietnam who are now the same age. And it's like this movie just doesn't give a fuck
now,
when it comes to that stuff.
You called Jeff Speakman low rent Wolverine. Apparently he comes from a family of Wolverines because these motherfuckers don't age. That's part of the problem.
So, yeah. So the family friend is played none other by Uncle Iroh him fucking self.
Yes.
Mako.
Mako, who I will always know from two roles. One, as the narrator of Conan the Barbarian.
Mm-hmm.
And two, less proudly, I will say, as this same character, the trainer, the mentor from a little movie called Sidekicks, starring other white guy karate legend Chuck Norris.
Well, starring is a little...
It's the reason the movie got made.
Yeah, but that's a Jonathan Brandis movie. That's
true. Jonathan Branded that way, yes.
Yeah, and he... That Sidekicks is actually kind of a clever family film.
Sidekick. Are you saying that we could potentially cover Sidekicks on this show at some point? Because I expected your reaction to me referencing that movie to be basically your reaction to The Perfect Weapon, and it's not, and I'm surprised to see this.
Not only that, I might insist that we do a Sidekick versus Sidekick, in which we talk about the movie Sidekicks with Chuck Norris and Jonathan Brandis, and we talk about the TV show Sidekicks, starring Gil Gerard and, what is his name? The Taekwondo kid from the late 80s who is one of the Ninja Turtles.
Ernie Reyes Jr.
Yeah.
Because he's from another movie I watched a lot as a kid called Surf Fucking Ninjas.
Yes, he is.
And Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze.
But as those of you longtime listeners know, Gil Gerard once tried to fuck my mom. I have watched everything Gil Gerard has ever done, and including Sidekicks, the TV show.
He tried to be Fuck Rogers in your mother's 21st century.
Yes,
that's what I know about that situation. And we're back. So yes, we have Mako as the longtime family friend who enrolls him in this Kempo school. And then we have some bad guys in the movie played by James Hong, who I do like if I ran down his entire like filmography, we'd be here all night.
I think Big Trouble in Little China is James Hong.
So Lo Pan is one of the baddies in this. And then we also
Lo Pan is the baddie in this.
He's the not well-concealed Kaiser Soze of this
movie. Like there's a moment where you see him in shadow and you're like, I don't know who that is. And every single one of you go, that's James Hong.
That's James fucking Hong.
Director of Teen Lust. Fuck off.
Man, what a weird way to kick a guy when he's down.
look.
To mention that he directed that movie.
Have you ever had to watch Teen List?
Because
I've been in a theater that showed it on 35, and James Hong deserves to be kicked for Teen List.
I didn't see it in a theater, and for that I am very grateful. We also have, as a bad guy in this movie, Cary Tagawa, who...
Professor!
No, that's Professor Toru Tanaka, who was also in this movie as the Enforcer, better known to a lot of you as, one Sub-Zero, now Plane Zero.
Yeah, so, okay, so let me just get this straight. We've got Uncle Iroh, we've got Lo Pan, we've got
Sub-Zero.
Sub-Zero. Are you telling me there's more?
I feel like we're going to shapeshift over to Cary Tagawa, who played Shang Tsung in fucking Mortal Kombat.
We've got a Shang Tsung and we've got a Sub-Zero in this movie?
We do.
Did I manage to come back around to the Mortal Kombat already?
Oh no, it was a flawless victory. I think if the guy who had the spider tattoo had a scorpion tattoo, I may have just come in my pants.
I mean, that would have been the way to go. I mean, there was definitely a reptile with the whole dragon.
You're right.
One of the coolest shots in the movie is that walking through the worst club in history. It is a club that is pretty much made up entirely.
All hallways.
That's it. It's just, you walk through all these hallways while people look at you going, why are you here in this club of hallways? And then eventually you get to a room.
Oh shit, I just realized that's the Black Belt Hallways of Fame. That's where it is. It's in that club. You just have to go down the hallway over there and then take a left and then a right and then another left into that hallway, which leads you down to a sub hallway that is the Black Belt Hallway of Fame.
I love that it's called the Croc Pit because it sounds like somebody didn't hear somebody correctly.
Like it was supposed to be a crock pot. And they're like, we're going to slow cook everything on our menu.
Instead, we're going to go to the Croc Pit
where we keep
crocodiles.
Yes.
For some insane reason. For some reason that won't play into the plot whatsoever.
Yeah, none of that makes sense, as doesn't a lot of this movie. But we failed to mention the one outstanding kid actor in this movie.
Oh, that's right.
A little actor named Dante Bosco.
Where would I know him from, Brian?
I want to say... Hook?
Rufio!
Which is funny, because next week we're going to be firing it up! Fire it up! And this week
Whoa, you're giving away the...
Am I giving away the goods? Sorry about that. Dante Bosco, who, by the way, his name is as fun to say as Rufio is to watch. I love that fucking name. Dante Bosco.
Everybody in Koreatown knows Young Kill Kim, dick. Tracy.
And I love how in this movie he is so 1991, he looks like he's an extra on Saved by the Bell. Like, it is just... like, he is just all acid-wash jeans... and fucking Prince and a fucking denim vest. Like, it's ridiculous how 1991 this kid is.
When I get up for the party, there's all this white guy karate. I don't pray, I gotta put on my jeans. Like, I want to watch that Saved by the Bell. It's just the cast of perfect.
It kills me that you didn't know I was going Saved by the Bell and that you just had that on your hip. It's
all right. Look, I may have watched a fair amount of Saved by the Bell this month. I've rediscovered it lately, and it was one of those weird things.
Whoa, sidebar.
Sidekick. I just found out, like, a couple of months ago that my wife was a huge fan of Saved by the Bell as a kid.
Are you shocked?
I was, because it didn't seem like her kind of show. It really didn't.
Wait, are you fucking kidding me? Literally, on your first date, geeked out over Friends together.
Yes!
This shocks you that she's Saved by the Bell nerd.
I'm a huge Friends fan. I had never seen an episode of Saved by the Bell.
Oh.
And so I was just talking about how I'd listened to this podcast about Saved by the Bell, and I thought some of the things were interesting, and I brought up some plot point from, like, a really late season, and she's like, oh yeah, that's where he cheats on her with blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, oh my God, what kind of things do you know? Like, tell me, teach me, Mako. Be my Mako of Saved by the Bell.
Wait, so your wife is taking you by the hand and taking you down that rabbit hole?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Oh my God.
She's taking me to Bayside High.
Wait, have you gotten to the very special episode yet?
Which very special episode?
The one about drug use?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Which is like, pot will destroy your life because...
Oh, no, not the pot one.
Oh, is why I said, which very special episode?
There is a famous one in which...
you're talking about the caffeine pills.
Yes, the caffeine pills.
I'm so excited! It's like, you know who wasn't excited? Everyone who saw Showgirls.
No, imagine being that age. Imagine growing up with these kids mm-hmm, being your mm-hmm, fucking age mm-hmm. and going from I'm so excited to Showgirls.
Oh my God, dude.
Like, that is, there's a reason why I'm as fucked up as I am. Like, I grew up in that era where I went from Saved by the Bell to Showgirls, and it was just like, yep, that dream's over.
I've got the power to watch Showgirls after revisiting Saved by the Bell. By the way, I think Showgirls is one of the most brilliant satires ever made, and I will stand by that until the day I die. It is Paul Verhoeven hating the fuck out of A Star is Born, and doing his version that is rancid on purpose, and in that way, in that regard, everything he does in that movie is the perfect choice for what he's doing.
There, about a decade ago, somebody did a series of bits of art for different versions of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Uh-huh.
And they made them from different eras. And, like, you know, so they took all of these characters from popular culture of the various decades.
Sure.
And, like, of course, if you guys can track this down, it's fucking great. But, like, in the 70s, Burt Reynolds was, ooh, you know, nice. The Bandit. Bandit was one of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. In the 80s, of course, Jack Burton was a member of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. In the 90s, they argued that Zach was a member of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen because Zach is a sociopath with the power to stop time.
Yes. Why anyone would be friends with Zach Morris is so fucking beyond me. I can't even tell you.
He's a complete sociopath that can completely put his fingers together and stop time and then talk to the fourth wall.
Yeah.
Like, it is the craziest fucking shit that is never fucking brought up in the entirety of Saved by the Bell.
Yeah. I want one episode, just one. Where, by the way, welcome back to the Bayside Cast, where we're just talking about Saved by the Bell for the rest of the hour.
You, the motherfucker asked for the perfect weapon. He gets 1991.
Fair point. Why is there not one episode where he does that, and then somebody walk in the background and goes, "Why is everyone standing still? Are we just what? What's he?" Is
and no then one the other talk kids are like, "Does this?" And the other kids are like, "Look, you need to talk to the school nurse. This is a thing we do. Zach has issues, and this is how we deal with it.
He is dangerously psychotic, and if we don't all do this, we might set him off. So we've been instructed to play along.
Now you put new headcanon. He's actually the kid from that Twilight Zone episode, grown up.
Yes, yes.
And everybody is just like, just let him do what he needs to do.
If you don't let him pretend to stop time, he will kill Vic Morrow. Wait, no, that's a different Twilight. So I'm very confused about what we're talking about here.
We have gone down the wrong rabbit hole.
Let's get back to
the perfect weapon.
Which is something I never thought I would hear you say.
These are words that are actually coming out of my mouth.
It just happened. It happened. Folks, I love it. So Dante Bosco, James Hong, Professor Toru Tanaka, Kerry Tagawa, like, this is a fucking, like I said, we are one Pat Morita and one Al Leong away from the Asian character actor all-stars in this movie.
No,
and that carries it a long way.
Yeah, because every time they're on screen, they're in an actual movie.
Yes.
And then Jeff Speakman speaks.
It's ironic that his last name is Speakman, and the one thing you don't need him to do very much is speak. Man, it evolves into this plot where, like, so he's growing up, he's learning Kenpo, he's learning self-discipline, but then
he
comes
never
the
really
scene.
Learned it.
No, because then comes the scene where his brother is being hassled by a jock, which really isn't what happens in the scene, but should be what happens in the scene. It's that his brother is fucking antagonizing a football player.
Yeah, his brother is a fucking douche canoe.
His little brother is like, my brother can kick your ass. You go fuck yourself. And Jeff's like, can we just leave, please? I'm a pole vaulter. I'm trying to letter and track. These guys are football players. They're 40 years old. I don't know why they're at this high school. Can we just leave? And the brother's like, my brother fucking beat you with one foot and fuck you. And it's just like, dude,
kick
shut
your ass with one foot.
Just shut. Please just shut up. Like, most people only kick with one foot, you dumb fuck. Like, that's not even a good insult. Can we leave? And because this football player, like, whacks this kid in the face, like, backhands him across the field.
Bloodies his nose. The only blood you'll see in this movie, by the way.
Oh, that's a very good point. That is a very good point.
The only blood you see in this movie is on a kid.
Now, that's not to say it's not violent. People get knives thrown at them. People get blown up. People have cars dropped on them. Like, there's a lot of potential for blood. And this is an R-rated movie. But,
kind of.
No, it is technically R-rated movie.
It may be an R-rated movie, but it's R-rated because in the 90s you got an R rating for kicking someone in the head. Like, that's what you got an R rating. That's why The Matrix was given an R rating.
Which is exactly what happens where young Speakman kicks this football player in the head so hard that the face mask of his helmet comes off. And I don't care who you are. That's fucking awesome. He fucking roundhouse kicks this guy until the face mask of his helmet comes flying off. But that blows up in Speakman's face, and his dad, played by the actor who plays Henry Hill's dad in the early scenes of Goodfellas, is like, "You're dangerous. I don't want you around your little brother because he's emulating you, and you're going to ruin his life." So, like, 17 years old, he's told to get the fuck out of the house, and I don't want you here. And
imagine that, 1991. Well, I've got this one movie where I've got this very small role, but this other film where I show up a lot and get a lot of dialogue.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everyone's going to remember me from The Perfect Weapon and not Goodfellas. Yeah, I think, honestly, he does a better job and is more likable in that movie where he beats a kid with a belt. Like, that's really fucked up. When you have two roles in the same year, and the one people like you better from is the one where you beat a kid with a belt. He should have beat... you know who he should have beat with a belt is the little brother in this fucking flashback.
Or the director of this movie.
Or Mark Dessau. It's entirely possible that should have happened as well.
Before we go any further, there's a cast member we have not mentioned yet. So...
and there's a reason we have not mentioned her yet.
So... back when Jeff Speakman was still a Jeff Speak boy, he gets enrolled into Kenpo to train himself. And there is a girl next to him, standing next to him in all of the scenes. And as he grows up, so too does that girl grow up. It would hint at that this girl would be important, right?
Yeah, it would hint at being a movie.
So later in the movie, we see him walk by his old Kenpo school, and we see his old master, who still has not aged a day in 20 years. And we see a girl who looks remarkably like that girl, played by Mariska Hargitay.
Mariska Hargitay.
Oh, God, no.
Mariska Hargitay.
No, 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 motherfucker, I saw that movie in a theater.
I just wanted to invoke a film we will never cover on this show.
We will never cover The Love Guru on this show. No.
I think you're angrier about that reference than you are having to sit through The Perfect Weapon.
No, because The Perfect Weapon isn't a good movie, but it's a great movie.
And we've got the power to cover it.
I'm fine with that. I will enjoy knocking back a few brews with my buddy and watching The Perfect Weapon. It was fun. We had a good time. I walked across the house and my wife said, "Wow, that was fun. I wish I watched it." I was like, "No, you don't." But we had fun. That was a blast. But no, I'm just saying it right now. Keep your $100. We're not covering The Love Guru.
Don't do it to us.
We will. No. I'm just saying no. I'm going to invoke a no. Like, the hard no. We are not covering that. So, but yes. So Mariska Hargitay is in this fucking movie. And there's apparently a 112-minute TV cut of this movie.
There is. And I'm pretty sure when this... okay, so I discovered this movie last year when it was on Hulu. And I watched it. And I am fairly certain I remember the scenes between Jeff Speakman and Mariska Hargitay where they're fostering this romance. And in this Blu-ray cut, she literally is at the... when he comes back to town, because he comes back to town when his mentor is having some issues with the Korean mob. And then... When his mentor Mako is unfortunately murdered by the Korean mob,
I mean,
you see her at the funeral, and that is it.
No, that is not true. We will go further with that. Let us point out that the reason why he's come to town is because he called his old friend out of the blue,
yeah,
for no apparent reason, and then he heard something going on in the background, and the phone got disconnected, and he's like, I don't have a real job. I just dig a ditch. I'm going to hop in my car and drive and see what's up with my boss.
You know, the world needs the world needs ditch diggers too, and apparently one of them is Jeff Speakman. So,
So he just kind of wanders in just as another group of thugs has come in to kick the crap out of his old friend. And then so we see Mariska Hargitay at the funeral. We see Mariska Hargitay peek out from the Kenpo school across the street. We also see Mariska Hargitay walking across the street. Like, she is never away from her master, as it, like, there's this invisible leash on her
through this whole movie. It's downright creepy.
It is. She never appears to have any agency on her own that isn't walking around with the Kenpo master to remind you that, hey, this is the girl he grew up with,
see?
Who keeps peeking in, who has nothing to do with this movie whatsoever.
Can we just rewind for a second? Back to a scene from that montage that I'm calling You Can't Do That With Kids Anymore, which is during the training montage where we see all these kids in the Kenpo class, and one of their routine exercises is they all get in a line and punch the person next to them in the stomach.
They just kind of arm smack the person next to them.
I'm pretty sure you can't do that with kids anymore. Like, you go to any strip mall martial arts studio, they're not going to just line the kids up and have them play slap shots. Like, it's just not something that's going to happen. They're not going to be in full contact with one another.
I could watch that, though.
I have two kids. I am a father. I love being a dad. I would fucking watch the shit out of that, and I don't care who knows it.
Yeah, I don't know. I need to get the neighborhood kids together and start a slap shots league.
No. It's fine, parents. It's a hockey thing. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
It's not a hockey thing at all.
Yeah, no. It's a Paul Newman movie. Don't worry.
Which they also shouldn't be watching. Which I think there's more blood in slap shots than there is in The Perfect Weapon.
Also, can I point out for a moment that are we covering The Perfect Weapon when we still haven't covered slap shots?
Because none of our patrons paid us $100 to talk about slap shot. That is why.
We should talk about slap shot.
Please continue to support us on Patreon, patreon.com/foodcinema. But today we are still talking about The Perfect Weapon.
We are really talking about The Perfect Weapon.
So yes, Mariska Hargitay ostensibly in this movie.
She is tight. You know what? I don't think she's bitter about this. I don't think that in her career she's like, you know what? If only I'd gotten a few more lines in the final cut of The Perfect Weapon, maybe I wouldn't have had a successful TV show for like a decade.
I bet she's really bitter about her agent okaying her being a reference. She's not in The Love Guru, but she is definitely...
Yes, she is.
What?
Have you not seen The Love Guru?
I guess not.
Dude, there's literally a moment where she shows up so he could say, Mariska Hargitay... Mariska Hargitay.
Oh my God.
Like, they literally, like, that movie is terrible for that reason. Like, for many other reasons that are all, do you get the joke? Well, we're going to put the joke on the joke, and then we're going to put the joke on the joke on the joke.
I think I'd rather watch Epic Movie with battery cables attached to my testicles.
I don't know about that.
Then watch The Love Guru.
Like, anything by those guys. Like,
oh, it's garbage, but at least it's not self-masturbatory Mike Myers garbage.
Yeah, and there's a reason why his career was done at that movie.
Yeah.
Like, that once that movie happened, like, he just went off to Canada to write really successful books about Canada.
The thing is...
You think I'm joking?
No, I'm not, but
that's not a joke.
I'm just thinking somebody, like, to write really successful books about Canada. It's like, I don't care if it's not true at all. I'm putting that on my LinkedIn. So you can fucking read that, Jeff Speakman. No, but it's really funny to think that Mike Myers' career since then has been attempting to be in things where people don't recognize that it's Mike Myers. I'm looking at you, Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah.
I'm looking at you, Bohemian Rhapsody. I'm looking at you, that fucking Gong Show remake that he did that nobody knew it was him for 3 seasons. Yeah. His career right now is, I hope nobody...
Wait, I didn't know.
Oh, you know about this? Yeah. Oh, fucking sidekick. The Gong Show. Do you remember they brought back The Gong Show?
I didn't know they brought back. I have not had cable television since 1997. Like, I've said that in the past. I've made jokes about the fact that the last time that I had cable television, I said, oh, I wonder if this Arliss show is going to be funny. That is...
Man Cargill.
Yes, like that's how long I've been without cable television. Anything that's a television show, I literally get on DVD or purchase per weekly, you know, via Amazon. Like,
just real top-notch Arliss reference, by the way. height of the popularity, man. Everybody loves them some Robert Wool. Way to go.
Dude, you want a deep cut? That's how deep it goes.
I think people are more interested in his son Jacob at this point on Twitters and all the stupid shit that he says. Oh God, I hope they're not actually related. I really hope they're not. But so you haven't had cable, so you don't know about the...
I have no idea there was a Gong Show.
So the Gong Show came back, and it had this really obnoxious British host. And all the promos were just kind of this obnoxious British host. And then come to find out via the internet, it's Mike Myers in makeup. And they didn't promote that at all. They didn't mention it anywhere in the advertising. They were trying to keep it a secret that the host of the new Gong Show is Mike Myers in makeup. So his career, since The Love Guru, has been basically comedian witness protection, where they're really hoping that nobody knows it's him. So if that doesn't speak volumes about how terrible The Love Guru is...
If it doesn't speakman volumes?
If it doesn't speakman volumes about how speaking terrible speaking Love Guru is, I don't know what is. Speaking Stargrove!
Look, we literally have spent more time talking about Mariska Hargitay and The Love Guru than Mariska Hargitay is in this fucking movie.
You know why?
And she's fourth billed.
She's fucking fourth billed?
She's billed over several of the people that we were actively excited about being in this fucking movie.
Rufio? More like Rufy lower than Mariska Hargitay on those fucking credits.
He's in like at least a dozen scenes of this fucking movie.
He becomes the kid sidekick to Speak Man. He's Speak Boy. He literally is Speak Boy. And he is billed lower than Mariska Hargitay, who doesn't have a fucking line of dialogue in this fucking movie.
No, not. She's in like four scenes silently staring into the camera.
She ends the movie by smiling at the camera and closing the door like we're just supposed to know who the fuck she is.
We have no idea.
We don't know. Nobody knows who she is. She's the real fucking ninja of this movie because no one knows her. She comes and goes as she pleases without anyone recognizing her.
She doesn't have parents. She lives at that fucking Kenpo school. She hangs out with the Kenpo teacher. Like, she, what the fuck? I don't understand it.
Yeah, and the rest of this plot, such as it is basically just Mako's been killed. Speakman wants to get revenge. Is the worst vigilante since Bronson.
Oh.
And since Bronson, Death Wish 4, the Crackdown Bronson. Like, he is a terrible vigilante.
Oh, he's god awful. He always gets his ass kicked at the wrong time.
He is easily dupable. I don't know of a more dupable white guy karate star than Jeff Speakman.
Yeah, it is a movie. It's a movie that if it were made in Asia instead of America, it would be considered racist. It's a movie in which the only person who has no idea what the fuck is going on in this movie is the fucking white guy. And it's just all of the Asian guys playing the white guy against other Asian guys. And he goes around and kicks ass and then gets his ass kicked and is constantly being played by everyone.
Dude, James Hong gets into his Tango and Cash limousine and is like, look,
Tango?
Cash? And basically says to Jeff Speakman, like, I know exactly who killed him.
Tango and Cash. Cash and Tango.
Tango and Cash. Cash. Tango. Man, revisiting the 89 Batman just for Jack Palance is one of the greatest things I've done in my life. He's so fucking awesome in that movie.
Jack Palance from the late 80s to the early 90s. In fact, I would argue the early 80s to the early 90s. Because a lot of people forget that before he became a movie star again, he did Ripley's Believe It or Not. And for years, have you seen any of these?
Oh, I have. And I can tell you, if you don't hear what Cargill is saying, you can... believe it or not.
God, that was, you know what,
I love him so much. That
Believe It or Not was the Unsolved Mysteries before there was Unsolved Mysteries.
Yes.
Like after every Believe It or Not, you got that chill up your fucking spine.
That and most people watching it had no idea who the host was prior to that show.
Yeah.
So it's a very apt comparison for sure. But I am sorry that this world has lost Jack Palance. Riptide for that guy. R.I.P.
Dude, Jack Palance, just years before he died, was doing fucking one-arm push-ups on the stage at the Oscars.
I want an Oscar. I want it for City Slickers. Gonna do push-ups. I can just imagine him at the show, like, if this was the Oscars now and he's doing that, he'd be on Twitter like, on my way to steal your girl.
I kind of, like, if we could resurrect one person from history to have as a guest on the show, Palance might be it. I mean, I don't know what this podcast is.
The fuck is junk food? Clearly, I only eat chicken breast and rice because I'm built like a fucking Mr. Olympian. Do you want to see me do one dick push-ups? Because I can do them.
It's like, you know what, Jack Palance? I believe you. I believe that you can do dick push-ups.
I fucking believe it.
Dick push-ups, by the way, is also my porn name, so...
I was going to say, dick push-ups, also in this movie.
Jeff Speakman as dick push-ups. In Street Night. By the way, which I believe was his only other theatrically released movie, yeah. Street Night.
Street Night. With a K.
Street with a K. That was the weird part. Why is there a silent K in the word street?
You can tell how much we love this movie, guys.
We're spending
every moment talking about anything but.
It's because at this point, I just want to say this as well. Mariska Hargitay has less screen time in this movie than a private elevator that is talked about so much. So much is discussed of this private elevator. James Hong basically tells our hero, it was this guy who did it, and I know because I'm clearly not the bad guy.
This is another part of this movie. Like, none of this movie understands how buildings work.
Or anything works.
Like, built doors, he's got a private elevator. What does that mean? It means it's a small little thing on the side of the building that moves up and down.
On the outside of the building. Can we talk about how it's a glass elevator on the outside of a building that is about as far from public, or far from private, as you can possibly be?
Nothing in this movie looks like it's an actual building. I swear to Christ, all of Koreatown in this movie was shot in a warehouse or studio, and they literally built a couple streets.
Oh, dude, I kept waiting for Mel Brooks' cowboys to come busting through the wall from the production next door in the middle of a fight.
There's, like, you look at it, like, there's a couple scenes where they're, like, looking out the door of the window, and I just busted out laughing because I'm like, that is one of the worst sets I've ever seen. That is not a real location. You literally, that wall across the street is just
the wall across the street that I called Scrim Jong-un. Because it was totally a fucking scrim that was painted.
Yeah.
Nuts!
And so that elevator, like, there's a moment where, like, this is part of why I felt like, when I fell in love with the movie. This private elevator is going down, and there's only a single cable holding up the private elevator.
Cable is, you're being polite. It's a rope.
And the rope has slack. Like, it's like... Like, it's supposed to, like, it doesn't, it, like, it looks like kids made this for a play. It's adorable.
Yeah.
But no, it's an actual martial arts movie that they spent real money on advertising as a real honest-to-God martial arts movie.
But how much of their production budget went to Snap?
I don't fucking know, but they fucking played every second of that goddamn song.
And then they played it again at the end. It's Chekhov's Snap, is what it is. Chekhov. It's like being at every cousin's wedding. Oh. This movie, like, this fucking song kept rearing its ugly head. But this elevator, again, I just want to point out that has more screen time than Mariska Hargitay, even though she's fourth billed.
And the elevator doesn't get a fucking credit.
No credit for
that
elevator.
Fair.
That elevator's name, I'm pretty sure, is Otis, and it gets no credit whatsoever in the end credits. And the thing is, they talk about this elevator like, oh, it's the only way in and out. I don't know how you're going to get in there to topple this guy. And he just climbs on top of it.
Yeah.
Like, it's the easiest thing in the world. Now I'm on top of the elevator. Now I'm arm-barring across a pipe leading off of the elevator to a window. I'm not exactly sure how that works.
Again, this movie doesn't understand how buildings work. I don't know what that pipe's supposed to be.
I think their architectural advisor on this movie was Frank Lloyd Wrong. Because they have no idea how fucking buildings work.
I'm kind of angry at you about that joke.
Well, that's fine. That's par for the course. Although I think it was the perfect pun. Then he crawls through a window and proceeds. This is where he becomes a shitbag in this movie. Is he beats the fuck... He paralyzes no less than 30 people in this movie who do not deserve it.
Yeah,
who really don't have any cause to be crippled by Speakman.
Yeah, no, that really, that's where Speakman lost me. Like, there's a moment.
That's where.
Where he, no, because the moment where it really, like, Jesus Christ, dude, where he pole vaults, Chekhov's pole vault.
Chekhov's pole vault, he's going to do it twice in this movie.
He pole vaults over a fence and lands behind some fucking rent-a-cop. Now, Old Man Cargill all over the fucking place. I will tell you that in 1991, the fucking minimum wage was like $3.25 an hour. Some dude making $3.25 an hour then realizes Jeff Speakman is standing behind him. Jeff Speakman says something really, you know, coy.
He's like, wow, I didn't think that would work, but it's actually kind of a funny line.
Then knocks him the fuck out.
That guy's going to be, if he doesn't walk with a limp for the rest of his life, then I'm a monkey's uncle.
Literally just some guy making $3.25 an hour, walking around in a circle around a fucking warehouse.
Yeah.
Like, clearly, this is not a guard with an Uzi and a suit. Like, this is not what you would typically expect to be in this kind of movie.
Right.
This is literally a legal rent-a-cop who gets knocked the fuck out by Jeff Speakman because Jeff Speakman couldn't wait a minute for him to round the corner so he could get over the fence.
Yeah. Yeah, Speakman is not exactly pulling off a great escape. He pole vaults very loudly over this fence, bitch slaps the poor... By the way, the security guard is built like Don Knotts. Like, we're not talking about a physical... adversary for Jeff Speakman.
This is a guy who's literally probably putting himself through college, trying to, you know, and paying the bills with his security guard fee because, hey, by the way, millennials, you could totally do that when we were kids. You could pay with $3.25 an hour. Of course you go to college fuck on that kind of money.
Fuck the Korean mafia. Baby boomers should have been the villain in this movie. Come on. All they do is take... But I think it's funny, though, that he's standing there and he's like, oh, I'm putting myself through college. Oh, wait a minute, a white guy doing karate. Bitch slap.
And he's blue broke. Jeans and a leather jacket.
Are
pole vaults over the barbed wire fence.
Oh my God. If the fucking security guard had walked up and be like, excuse me, are those Bugle Boy jeans you're wearing? And then just got
the only slapped. Way it could be more 1991 is if that had happened. Like, it's really the only way.
Oh my God, better movie. And then he proceeds to go in a warehouse and beat up a bunch of union construction workers who could not be further removed from the mafia
well,
if they tried.
I don't know. No. The first few guys are really legit union dudes.
Oh, you mean the guys who for 10 minutes in this movie in two different scenes are slowly moving a tiny piece of fishnet from one side of a box to another?
Yeah.
And because, it takes two of them to do it because it's a union job, apparently?
You know what? I'd never have done this. The first AD on this movie... Oh my God, guys, learn how to fucking extra properly. Every extra in this movie has no idea what the fuck they're supposed to be doing. Like, they just don't. Like, every single extra looks like they've never been an extra before, and they've just gotten like, all right, act natural, and everybody goes, what? And they go, action! Wait, I don't know. Oh, the movie guy is coming near me. I will pick up this box of chickens and move it to the other side of the street.
There's literally a truck slowly driving across the road during a car chase.
While there's a guy slowly motioning it out, because guys who drive trucks don't know how to back out of parking lots.
And as we were watching it, you were like, where are the guys with the fruit stands and the pane of glass
to walk across the street? Where's the pane of glass to walk back and forth across the street?
You needed, I mean, not to bring Mike Myers up again, but you needed that Wayne's World moment of, wait, what are you guys doing? Oh, we're just slowly walking this pane of glass back and forth. Why? Don't know. Probably won't come up again. All right, fine. And they just walk away. And then sure enough, during the car chase, by the way, Wayne's World 2, I believe that's from, starring James Hong. So everything is connected because Inception. But yeah, so he breaks in and he beats all these construction workers half to death.
That was my point, is the second half of the construction workers, they just kind of come around a corner and go, who are you? And swing a hook at him. Yeah. Like, dude, I was sent by your manager. I'm checking out on things. Like, what's going on? Like, I could be somebody, I could be an inspector.
I'm the fucking shop foreman. Why are you trying to kill me?
Look, I'm a new hire. What the fuck? Everybody's carrying hooks and everybody's using them to try to kill the guy in the leather jacket that just walked in.
I know what you did last, Speakman. They are coming at him with so many fucking fish hooks. It's nuts. And that leads to a fight. I will say fight with James Hong. It's really a fight with Kerry Tagawa and then Professor Toru Tanaka, where he kills Kerry Tanaga. Kerry Tagawa. And then he decides, after murdering so many people as a vigilante, that it's not worth it to kill James Hong. Which is my favorite part of this movie, where he picks him up and he's like, you're not worth it. I'm like, were any of the people you murdered up until this point worth it?
Like, because you almost killed a dude in front of his fucking family for this exact same reason.
Imagine Death Wish 3 if Charles Bronson got to the older brother from Happy Days and is like, you know what, Pally, you're not worth it. The giggler was worth it, and half of your neighborhood that I murdered with the explosions and the collateral damage, totally worth it. You're not worth it. You'd be like, bullshit, Bronson. What the fuck are you trying to... What are you on about? This is ridiculous. That's what Speakman tries to pull off. But then James Hong tries to secret knife him in the back, forgetting about Kenpo Stick Ex Machina, which we've seen him put in and out of his jacket no less than 5 times.
Yeah, except that he puts him... how the fuck were they in his jacket?
Oh.
Like, does he have a special Kenpo?
Did you not notice they cut away every time? He put it in the back of his jacket.
Oh, yes.
And then there'd be a cut as he was adjusting it. I'm like, oh, that's bullshit.
No.
You're not a Ninja Turtle.
I saw that.
Live on your shell.
My problem is laws of physics. Where the fuck are you keeping Kenpo sticks in the back of a tight leather jacket that nobody fucking sees them?
Yeah, exactly. Instead of Speakman, he must be Steve Blackman with all those Kenpo sticks. Ask your parents who watched the Attitude Era of WWF. Don't worry about it. Then we get to this fight with Toru Tanaka, who shows up a little too late, really, to protect his boss. And then he proceeds to... They have a belt fight? Now, I want to talk about this. They have a belt fight in this movie. It's not something you see very often.
They have a belt fight.
Like, it's fucking Pootie Tang. Like, I don't know what the fuck is going on here, but it's a belt fight.
Wow.
You're welcome.
No, I mean, we literally, think about all the movies we've referenced in this fucking episode, and how we've never ever mentioned any of them before.
What can I say except you're welcome? Yeah, and then they get into this belt fight that ends with Professor Toru Tanaka being set on fire by a propane tank, and then...
Beautifully.
It's
a great burn that every time they cut back to him, it clearly looks like somebody dressed up to look like him with a big fake head to melt in the fire. Like, it's literally a terrible effect, but a great burn.
He looks like fucking Frank with that helmet head going on. Speaking of movies we've never referenced before, you're welcome! And
Hey, whoa. Frank's actually good.
No, I'm not saying it's bad. A lot of the movies we've referenced are good. Some of them not, but a lot of them are. That's the thing.
Mariska Hargitay. I don't think you've actually watched Love Guru.
I don't think I have either, and I'm okay with that.
I think your punishment and your penance for The Perfect Weapon is to go home and watch that tonight and understand my pain. And you can't turn it off.
Are you insinuating that The Perfect Weapon is as bad as The Love Guru?
No. I'm insinuating that you deserve the fucking Love Guru right now.
I have never had anyone say anything as hurtful to me as you just said right now. And I've been divorced once. That's what I'm saying to you right now. But, so the best part about this burn, which I think even Kane Hodder would be like, that's a good burn, is that he then gets blown up. So he's on fire for probably 2 straight minutes, and then the propane tank blows. So it could have been just a burn. It could have been just an explosion. It's actually both.
Yes.
Because otherwise, Sub-Zero would never be plain Zero. He would continue to be Sub-Zero.
Well, because, you know, one guy who killed him on screen in the 90s, or actually, no, in the 80s, was Arnold Schwarzenegger, and then it was Jeff Speakman.
You gotta feel like that's a step down. But I will say, if you just done a burn, that's a fatality. Doing the burn and the explosion, that's when it becomes a brutality for Sub-Zero.
Brutality.
And then we basically come to the end of the movie.
Speakman wins brutality.
But there is nothing in the way of a flawless victory for Jeff Speakman at any point in this movie.
No.
I'm just going to say that. It is not, despite the fact that he's described as the perfect weapon, this is a very imperfect movie.
He's a very imperfect weapon. Like, there's nothing about this movie that makes sense. There's no real structure to it. It's all over the fucking map. It just is a movie that knows the story it wants to tell in 80 minutes and is like, fuck it, this is what the movie is.
Now, the one thing we didn't mention is that he teams up with his younger brother, who he hasn't seen in years.
Oh.
Who you dubbed. This was amazing. The way this fucking happened could not have been more perfect. He's sitting in a car, like on a stakeout in front of this bank. It's Jeff Speakman and his younger brother, who is now grown up and they've reunited. He's a police detective. who you referred to as...
Bailiff Reinhold?
Bailiff Reinhold.
Because he looks like the D-list Judge Reinhold you get when Judge Reinhold turns you down.
And you're saying this...
And I started saying, yeah, no, I was just say, I just started, we're watching it, and I start saying, I start going, da, 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 and then Rufio fucking pops up exactly like Eddie Murphy did.
It was a, if fucking Rufio had popped up and gone, it would have been like, oh my God, it's the same fucking movie, this is amazing. I am on board for this.
The fact that there were no bananas in the fucking exhaust pipe.
No tailpipe bananas.
There's no tailpipe bananas in this movie.
That's what this movie
is. But there sure is a Bailiff Reinhold.
There is a Bailiff Reinhold. And I want to say this. As much as we've taken the piss out of Jeff Speakman, Hollywood believed in this guy for a very short window of time. There was supposed to be a sequel to The Perfect Weapon. But what happened was between the production and release of the movie, there was a change of guard at Paramount, and the new management did not have the same faith in Jeff Speakman.
Maybe because they'd seen the movie?
Because they were aware that the movie existed. And Jeff Speakman did not do the Mike Myers thing of convincing people he wasn't in the movie, which was really his shortcoming. But I do want to say that one of the craziest fucking things that my research team turned up when they were researching this movie is apparently Jeff Speakman at one point in very, very early versions of Speed, because of the multi-picture deal with Paramount, Jeff Speakman was supposed to be the Keanu Reeves character in Speed. That was one of the movies that they signed him to before seeing The Perfect Weapon. And when the changing of the guard happened at Paramount, they went, no thanks, Speakman. But can you fucking imagine for one goddamn second that the movie Speed is Sandra Bullock and Jeff Speakman? Guys, that almost happened.
You know what the trailers would have been? Jeff Speakman.
If this bus goes under 55 miles an hour, I won't get another black belt in Kempo. Well, why is that a problem? Because I'm Jeff Speakman, motherfucker! Speed coming this summer.
Speakman.
It's nuts. It's nuts to think. This is one of
No. Because you know what? That's you. Without Keanu, you do not have. You do not have the rest of that cast.
Yes, this is a good point.
Jeff Speakman in Speed, also with Mariska Hargitay.
And she doesn't say a fucking thing. She's on the bus. She's driving the bus.
No lines at all.
No lines whatsoever. And James Hong is the Dennis Hopper character. Who you know is the bad guy the whole time. Oh my God. Different movie, not a better movie, but maybe a great movie. I don't know. It's entirely possible. And probably 3 to 4 instances of a different Snap song. I'm more on board for that movie than I was Speed 2 Cruise Control. So there's at least that. Holy shit, guys.
Jesus.
And speaking of conspiracies, we've mentioned the director of this movie is Mark DeSalle, who is a producer on Bloodsport, who quote-unquote directed Kickboxer. There is apparently a bit of a controversy with that because there's another director credited on Bloodsport, David Wirth. And David Wirth has said that he really directed... It was kind of a weird Toby Hooper, Steven Spielberg, Poltergeist situation where David Wirth's like, no, I actually directed Kickboxer. Mark DeSalle didn't do anything. But what's really interesting about that is that David Wirth has directed movies that I feel like we would maybe cover ourselves without prompting, including Warriors of the Wasteland, starring The Paper Chases, Robert Ginty, and a talking motorcycle. Do you remember this one?
Oh, yes.
With Donald Pleasance and also Fred the Hammer Williamson, other Hammer.
Fred the Hammer Williamson.
Guys, David Wirth directed that and also supposedly directed Kickboxer. So there's a weird confluence of circumstances around this movie that is The Perfect Weapon. And we get to the not-so-perfect ending, which is just Mariska Hargitay closing the door of the dojo, and we've got the power. Oh, we've got it.
We've got the power again.
We paid for the power. We're going to play the power.
Mariska Hargitay smiles at the camera as she closes the door, and we're like, who the fuck are you in this movie, Mariska? Like, I don't understand. Like, you're the girl standing next to him, and the rest, I don't get it.
And that is the end of The Perfect Weapon. And we have reached the end of this episode. So, Cargill, do you have any final thoughts about the experience? I'm glad we get to watch this together. We don't get to do that very often.
We don't get to watch a lot of these movies together.
But
especially not as special as The Perfect Weapon.
You know what? It's a special movie, and no one is going to argue with you on that.
But what is our junk food pairing this week? Because you know what? There's not a lot of...
Not really anything going on. There's a really unfortunate series of vaudeville jokes about kimchi, where it's like, I want to talk to you about your neighbor, Mr. Kim.
I was trying to avoid kimchi.
Yeah, and you are welcome to give me something different. I cannot for the life of me think of anything in The Perfect Weapon that is worth really talking about as the junk food pairing. And I mean, if you have another thought, go for it. But there's this really terrible scene in the movie where his brother walks into a restaurant. And he's like, I want to talk to you about the murder of your neighbor, Mr. Kim. Which, by the way, as you pointed out, you're in Koreatown. You might want to be more specific because there's a few Mr. Kims in this neighborhood. And the guy's like, oh, kimchi. And he like brings out a box of takeout and he like hands it to him. He's like, no, I want it. And he says something else, like, oh, more
kimchi. I'm asking about a murder.
Oh, more kimchi. And he's like, and it's like, when is the expiration date on these jokes? Because holy shit. And then, of course, the big punchline is, as he's walking out, okay, well, thank you. Oh, you're welcome. Have a nice day. Oh, he speaks perfect English and he was fleecing you. Isn't that hilarious? Isn't that a joke?
Yeah.
Yeah. It happened in front of us.
You know what? I think we just the junk food pairing here is exactly how we did it.
Uh-huh.
12 pack of Shiner Bock.
Yes.
That you demolish with your buddy while you watch this movie, because this movie probably shouldn't be watched alone and it probably shouldn't be watched sober.
The movie maybe shouldn't be watched at all. Like, I'm not arguing that it should be watched in the first place, but I do want to thank our Patreon subscriber Ian, who paid us so that we would talk about it, because I've had a really fun time talking about everything but The Perfect Weapon in the course of this Perfect Weapon episode.
Well, no, I hope Ian isn't like, oh man, I love this movie so much, and I just want to know that other people out there appreciate this film, because they don't.
I got to say this, though. We watched it from my personal Blu-ray, so I...
Yeah, you owned it.
I do, actually.
Like, it's not streaming anywhere at the moment.
It's
not. Streaming on Hulu last month, and we're like, yeah, fuck it, we'll stream it and we'll watch this movie. And then now it's like, oh no. And then you were like,
that. It was gone.
It's a good thing I own it. And it's like I could not be Neo and dodge that fucking bullet this month. So
no, but you know what? Because of my Blu-ray, we've got the power to watch it, despite the fact that it's not streaming anywhere. And we have the power to end this episode. I will remind you guys that we are available on iTunes, on Blog Talk Radio, and on Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. Like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And if you really like the show...
I mean, you really like the show.
If you like it more than Jeff Speakman likes fighting in denim, you can go to patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. And for as little as a dollar an episode, you get access to bonus content that nobody else gets to hear. And if you want to join at that Lieutenant of Megaforce level, which I gotta tell you, Cargill, we've had a few new Lieutenants of Megaforce in the last couple weeks. So this shit may not end for you.
Is 2019 soon. Just the year where
after the fall of Junk Food Cinema? Yes.
After the fall of Junk Food Cinema, where we just covered, like, we don't have to choose movies anymore.
You
we
guys are doing it for us. You are doing it.
You're
for
doing
us.
It and doing it and doing it well. Doing it and doing it and doing it well.
I can do it, put your back into it. You can do it, put Speakman into it. Cargill, where can people find you on the interwebs?
Hiding from the perfect weapon. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at Massawyrm. That's MASSAWYRM. And you can find my podcast all about writing along with Dave Chen over on Write Along Pod.
Nice. I like how you said writing along with Dave Chen on Write Along. It was almost like a perfect segue into talking about your podcast. That was very well done. You can find me on Twitter at BryGuySalisbury and on Twitter as well at Junk Food Cinema. And we're going to end the show. Thank you again, Ian, for recommending The Perfect Weapon. But I want to remind you that if you have a glass elevator on the outside of a building, it's not a fucking private elevator, guys.